Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name is Jackson Lehurst, and today we're going to look back at the derby that definitely wasn't a derby, except for people who thought it was a derby, and it definitely wasn't a cup final for either set of fans. And we're also
definitely wasn't a derby, Jack. Definitely wasn't a derby. Stop calling it a derby, mate.
Someone called it a derby, but it definitely wasn't me.
No, it's not a derby.
But yeah. Anyway, we'll look back at that and forward to the visits of Wickham and Morecambe. That voice you heard just there was Julian Roberts. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you doing? I'm looking forward to talking about a football team that is a sodding disgrace to the interest of football.
Tim Pop, pissy little team like that. And Tom Walker.
Good afternoon. How are we?
Yeah, feeling good.
Tom, have you recovered from Derby Day yourself? Or
if one more person calls it a derby, I will lose my shit.
Swindle, I can't let this start before we mention your glasses because I see you there squinting at the screen, struggling to make out the words on the running order. Tell the listeners what happened to your glasses.
Well, I mean, we were just in the ground before the game that wasn't a derby, discussing the game that wasn't a derby and also singing a few songs, you know, over our Bovrils. And the singing and dancing got a little bit overzealous and the glasses fell to the concrete floor of Portman Road and was trod on by a couple of people, one of whom I'm sure was me. So then, yeah, picking them back up with a snapped frame and one lens in, I did my best for the first half and bits of the second half to see through those glasses. But then when Joe Ironside scored, which he did, by the way, they just suddenly flew off my face into my hand and then were launched.
What a mystery. They flew off your face into your hand and then onto the pitch.
Yeah. Don't know how it happened, but yeah.
So funny in the first half, you were sat like the row, or you like stood in the row in front of me. And at one point you sat down and you were on your phone. I just looked over your shoulder. It's just like Specsavers at Ipswich.
Not my finest moment, but a great day though, wasn't it? And I mean, we can have the conversation till the cows come home about whether it was a derby and whether it was a cup final and whether we were overzealous or whether they were sore losers. Mark got in touch at Abbey Stand Pod about yesterday's game and said, should we be adding a star above our badge on next season's home shirt? So I suppose that's a good place to start. What do you reckon, Julian?
I think we should add a star to next season's home shirt to signify every single Ipswich fan that we've managed to rattle over the past 24 hours. I reckon it'd just be a shirt covered in stars.
Shirt covered in tractors, maybe.
Yeah, could be.
And let's look at the game then. There's plenty to discuss. But Tom, we went there and I think it's fair to say expectations were kind of fair to middling. And there are a few people calling out narrow victories, but quite a lot of people thought we were going to get thumped. How did you feel before the game yesterday?
I would say cautious optimism going into the game. Clearly, I think, you know, in the back of everyone's mind was what happened at Hillsborough a few weeks ago. And it was, I guess, in a lot of senses, quite a similar sort of challenge. So, I wouldn't say I expected the win, but I thought that we would compete better than we did at Hillsborough because, you know, we know what Mark Bonner teams are like in terms of how they bounce back. And I actually think with the pressure off us a little bit, it's really going to help us for the next few weeks. A lot of teams, or sometimes you get teams who are sort of in mid-table, confirmed safety, which of course we now all but have, can be accused of being on the beach a little bit. But I just feel like this group of players that won't really be too much of a concern. So, yeah, I'd say I'd cautious optimism. I mean, in terms of, you know, what you expect and what you sort of hope for, I mean, it probably couldn't have really played out much better, I think. I want to wheel out an old-fashioned cliche that it was a perfect away performance. I think that's exactly what it was. Had quite an obvious game plan that I think we had or have had going into a lot of games away from home this season. And it was just executed like so well all over the pitch. I mean, here comes another cliche. It's going to be it's really difficult to just take one man, like pick one man of the match. It's one of those where like if you know, like the train home and stuff like that, you know, you're talking about who your man of the match was and you basically end up talking about 10 minutes and mention every single player. It was just one of those days. I would say that Ipswich probably played their part in it a little bit as well. I didn't think they were that good. They're clearly a well-drilled team. They're clearly a team that have good players that can play the ball around the back, but just felt like they were missing a little bit of bite. And, you know, it reminded me of Portsmouth a little bit in some ways, Portsmouth away, and that, you know, balls were coming into the box. And like, weirdly, like towards the end of the game, you got more and more confident that every time the ball comes into the box, it's going to be thudded away by Lloyd Jones's forehead. So, yeah, really, really good performance, really, really good day out. And I think the atmosphere was, in the away end at least, was something that we'll, you know, remember for quite a long time.
It was also like so remarkably similar to how the game unfolded at Newcastle in very similar ways, right? Like in the way that we approached the game, in the way that you just mentioned there, Tom, like you can't pick one man of the match, really. You could make a case for, you know, pretty much all 11 players. And then you just look at the like the big match events, like scoring in the first half yesterday, which, by the way, did look very, very onside from a screenshot that I've seen. And then obviously that big penalty chance at Newcastle. And then I think we scored on, I think it's the exact same minute, isn't it, between Ipswich and Newcastle. And just the way we saw out both games, I mean, obviously we'll probably talk about their big chance, at the, well, not just chance at the end, their disallowed goal at the end. But as Tom said, I just the resilience in that back line and just the way that Bonner's sides like learn from mistakes, like you say, at Hillsborough, Tom, or even just how we struggled against three at the back. And yesterday, just going to that occasion, that somewhere like that ground, and the, it's obviously, you know, it was a cup final, wasn't it? So it was a big day, and they just dealt with it so well. It was perfect.
It was really, yeah, it was very admirable to see. Wes Burns' post-match interview from Ipswich kind of stated that Cambridge, well, it said teams come here and park the bus, and I don't think Cambridge did that at all yesterday. I think that's kind of doing them a bit.
I also hate this narrative, this park the bus narrative. It's such a like, it's just something that's trotted out, and I just think it's pure bitterness. And probably I've said it before when, you know, we've struggled to break teams down at various points. Maybe not so much this season, but just in general, I'm sure it's something you say. But it's something you say when it's what it actually is if you want to break it down, is everything we just said. It's like this defensive resilience and Ipswich not being able to break us down. And I can see why they're frustrated, but I don't think like it's always used as a criticism. Do you know what I mean? At any level. I don't think that's true. And also, is it even true? Like, first of all, probably we had a goal unfairly ruled out. Williams had a header tipped over the bar in the first half, and May had a really presentable opportunity as well in the first half. Like, we created chances. I don't think for a team that goes there and parks the bus, it's not like it wasn't quite smash and grab, I'd say. I thought we were well worth it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I really think that is a disservice to Cambridge. And Tom, as you said, it's one of those squad performances that you can name many men of the match, if you will. But yeah, there was quite a lot of kind of argy-bargy yesterday, and a lot of comments about, firstly, Sam Smith being there every time there's anything going on, but also how good is George Williams at being a wind-up merchant, and how useful is that to the team?
Yeah, I'll start with Smith. I mean, I know that there's, I guess, a train of thought that it's quite frustrating that, you know, he's getting himself in the book almost every week. But like a big part of me really likes seeing that, because he's clearly like, it embodies a lot of what we love about this team so much, in that, you know, he's sticking up for his teammates, you know, and, you know, clearly it can lead to awkward situations like the Portsmouth game, for example, where he picks up two bookings and obviously leaves us in a tight spot. But you know, I'm never going to criticise one of our players for sticking up for his teammates. And I mean, going on to George Williams, just week after week, like, it's becoming an increasingly more like impressive bit of recruitment, that getting him in the door. We had a real challenge to, you know, when we lost Kyle Noyle at the end of last season. And I think we had a conversation at the start of the year about, you know, how well have we replaced him. And clearly he's a different type of player, but I think he's invaluable to us as a team because of the experience that he brings. I think he's really the only player in the squad, you know, with like really extensive experience at this level. You know, there's an emphasis made on signing players in the summer with some experience at League One level, but Williams is the one who's played sort of season after season here. And he looks so comfortable. Clearly, he likes winding up his opposition players and the fans as well. And that just makes it even better, I guess. But you know, just said how difficult it is to pick a man of the match, but he'd be right up there.
Absolutely. A quick question to both of you, really, but I think the answer will be pretty sure. We had a tweet from the artist at Abistan Pod, we are, and asking, theoretical question, the choice of taking Noyle back, but obviously having to sacrifice Williams, what would you do? Julian?
It is tough, that. I think something we've covered before is that maybe Noyle's got a bit of an advantage going forward. Maybe his attacking qualities are slightly better than Williams. I think Williams offers a lot in that situation as well. He's getting himself in good positions from set pieces as well. Obviously, he scored twice, hasn't he, this season from set pieces. So he's a bit of a threat there that, unless I'm wrong, I don't think Noyle was so much last year. I think for me, it's hard for me to not say Williams, having seen what we've done this season. Just as Tom said there, the experience that the guy has, it's amazing what that will bring to this squad. Not that Noyle is like fresh-faced, but I do think Williams probably has the edge there, and I think that's probably the crucial difference between them. And it's hard for me to just not back every single player in this team full stop. I don't know who, do you know what I mean? Like, who do you really want to, especially after yesterday? I'm just on such a high from all of these, from this team, and there's so much. Obviously, Noah was brilliant last season as well, but for me, it's just got to be Williams.
Yeah, he's got those great long throws as well. Tom, are you team Williams or team Noyle?
I'm gonna have to go with Lieutenant George Williams, I think.
The man himself. Reporting
good
for Julian.
Choice. It was a kind of a battling game yesterday. And like we said, Ipswich themselves did have a few chances, Tom. And then that goal obviously ruled out near the end. I think Cambridge were very good value for that 1-0 win. Are you in agreement there?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the comment that I think it was Wes Burns, wasn't it, in you know, said about sort of parking the bus. I guess kind of leads quite nicely onto that question. But I mean, like, it would be very weird if 1-0 up away from home at a game like Ipswich, we were just chucking like bodies forward. But we gave as good as we got, definitely. Like I said, I think, and unless I'm just misremembering it, which is quite possible, having it's within the realms of possibility. I can't really remember Mitov having a huge amount to do. Like, obviously there was a lot of pressure sort of in and around the box, but like a Newcastle, for example, like it's obviously a really good comparison, you know, because the games did play out so well, so similarly, sorry, like Julian just said, like, you know, Mitov was like the whole talking point because he was making save after save after save. And I just don't think he was tested that much, to be honest, which is testament to the back four probably more than anything. But I mean, you know, like, again, like Julian mentions, like we have what looks to be like a fairly decent goal written off for offside, which, you know, sometimes they get them right, sometimes they get them wrong. It was obviously very tight, but it didn't look like it was offside from the sort of stills that you've seen after the game. And barring one disallowed goal, like, I don't really think Ipswich offered a huge amount. Tidying the ball, you know, passing the ball sort of between defence and midfield, building up fairly well, but then it got to that sort of last bit, like I've said, and they just didn't really offer much. And also, I also felt that we actually carried a bit of a threat on the counter. I know we'll come on to talk about Harvey Nibbs, I guess, a little bit, and he was crucial in that. I think as well, just to, you know, speak a bit more on Nibbs, I think specifically, we've talked a lot about how we're going to tackle three at the back. And I think he's really important for that. He offers obviously something very different to what Wes does in terms of the energy and the sort of work, not work rate, but you know what I mean? Like the way that he plays the game, harrying the defenders, chasing down every single lost cause. you know, when you've got three centre backs who might otherwise have quite a lot of time on the ball, I do think that helps quite a lot to have someone like him in there. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the game, I mean, if anyone's come out of that game thinking that we didn't deserve to win it, then I think they're watching a pretty different match of football than I was.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned Nibs there. Daniel's been in contact with us and says Nibs's form now fully fit shows that he's a player he can be, especially after yesterday's game. Julian, would we be mad not to renew his contract? Daniel asks.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think he's proven his worth and his skill and his ability just in the past couple of months. But even again, not to mention Newcastle, but you know, he was a key player on that day as well. So he's played in big games now. He's clearly growing as a footballer. I mean, I was sat here probably 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't on the pod that week. I was listening to the pod when you boys were sat talking about how his missed chances against MK Dons, you know, ultimately cost us that game. But what we always see with Bonner squads as a whole, and I think with players, is just how they learn from these mistakes and from those, you know, those poor moments. And I think if Nibs adds that sort of clinical side to his finishing, he will be a bit of a force to deal with, because there was. I was definitely one of his biggest critics. I mean, I remember sitting on this podcast and talking about how he probably needs a bit of time out on loan. Just goes to show, don't it? Like, these players, they prove everyone wrong, including their own fans. And I don't think I was alone in my opinion on Nibs before. But yesterday he was brilliant. What one thing on him I would say though is that I do think what it shows more than anything is Nibs playing in the hole in the number 10 role. I wouldn't want to just rely on that every single week, because as Tom just said, it very much is, it's like a horses for courses, right? It's perfect when you're not going to have a lot of the ball, when you want to set the tone, you want to harry defenders, you want to put it on them a little bit, when you know that you're going to, you know, suffer lots of periods without the ball. But then that sort of more creative player in the sense of someone like Wes, or maybe let's say even Adam May or Jack Lancaster, who play that slightly different style to Nibs, I think that will also be crucial in certain games where we are the team breaking other teams down, where I don't think that's the sort of game that would suit Nibs quite so much. So again, it's just one of them things where Tom makes a great point there about three at the back. Maybe that's one of the answers, right? It's a different element to how you break down a team playing three at the back, or how you sort of put pressure on them. And I think Nibs in that number 10 role has shown that that's a brilliant option. But it would be interesting to see, like, Morecambe at home, for example, who we go with for a game like that, because that's the sort of game where I'd want us to be looking at having the majority of possession. And I wouldn't want Nibs in that role there. I'd personally would rather have a Lancaster or a Wes. But that's not a criticism of the player himself. It's just a different way of playing. And it gives us so many options next season, which is crucial.
Yeah, you've mentioned quite a few different players there, all of whom I think we'll kind of get on to throughout the pod. James Brophy yesterday featured, and I thought, and it was confirmed to me via a question from Thomas, was that Brophy's first right-footed cross of his season? And I think the answer is probably yes. And also there was a question kind of, you know, talking about Brophy and is he going to replace Houlihan? I mean, they're very different players, aren't they? And not the same position. So he's not a replacement. But are we happy with Brophy looking forward to next season, Tom?
Yeah, 100%. I think the time that it's been an actual debate about whether he is or isn't, you know, good enough or the right option for this football team, that time's long gone now. I think, again, if you can't see the obvious value that he brings to the team, specifically in games like that, getting us out of tight situations, where, you know, basically every time he gets the ball, he seems to end up at least 40 yards further forward than when he picked it up. It's just clear as day. He's another one, you know, that we brought in during the summer who, you know, has just slotted in so well. And I think the thing that I think has been most impressive about a lot of the guys that have come in is when you watch the team like we had last season, that, you know, we've spoken time and time again about why we like the team, you know, what they represent and that sort of stuff. It could be quite difficult to sort of bring in players who buy into it in a similar way, but they all seem to just get it and they all seem to just really, really enjoy it. You know, Williams is an obvious example of it. He steamed over towards the away end at full time.
Jones as well. You see Jones.
Jones as well as that. I mean, the list goes on. And, you know, for people who listen to this pod every week, it's probably gonna get quite boring. You know, I sat there just praising them all the time. It'd be good to have a bit of turmoil at some point, wouldn't it? Where we can actually start slacking
it off. I'm looking forward to a nice bit of scandal. That would be good, wouldn't it? That's what we need here. Something really scandalous.
Well, let's set the cat amongst the pigeons now then. for all the good that Cambridge United are doing, you know, in games that aren't derbies and aren't cup finals, there's a worrying kind of trend being set here, and it was raised by Dan on Twitter. Sorry. So when will bigger clubs start sniffing around Lord Mark Bonner, and can we realistically hold on to him if a top championship team comes in for him? So, Julian, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think Bonner should throw the last few games just to get people off the scent?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe that'll be it. Because they won't look at all of the good stuff he's done in the 2 years. They'll just look at the isolated block of six games. Yeah, at the end of the
season. Exactly. Smart, so should be enough.
I don't know. I do think that there's... I think that... How do you answer this? First of all, like, I really hope not, is like the, you know, the obvious thing to say. I do think he wouldn't go anywhere unless it was the perfect opportunity, and just the way that the club is sort of built around him, and the way the club is run at the moment. You've also got to remember that he is a Cambridge United fan. He's living sort of our dreams of, you know, yesterday there was a point where everyone was singing Mark Bonner's Zambarami, and I was thinking that must be mental to be him. There must be a little part of it that's like that kid that stood on a habit that's like, bloody hell, like that's my football team, they're singing my name. And I do think that would come into it a little bit. And I still don't know if, I don't know, you take it, let's take like a, who's a good example of someone who might come in for him, so you have some, I don't know, Coventry, whoever, yeah. Right? It's a big move. It would be a big move for them as well, because he's not proven at that level at all. And he's only had two full seasons in management. So it would be a risk sort of on both sides. So I don't think it's, maybe this is famous last words, but I don't think it's as imminent a threat as we probably think it is. Tom, I don't know. Do you agree? Or
yeah, a little bit. I think as well, like, football's a funny game, especially for managers, in that, like, he could go from, you know, if he left Cambridge, like, he's got a fresh slate somewhere else. He doesn't have the credit in the bank that he's got with us. Like, I think it's any exaggeration to say that he's basically unsackable at Cambridge United, you know, pretty much regardless what happens, unless it is like, you know, so let's say next season we lost like our first like 15 games. There might be a like conversation about it, but I do think it'd have to be that extreme. Like, he's that secure in the job at the moment. And like, what better place is there to learn? Like, I would imagine he'll have loftier ambitions maybe in the future than maybe just sticking with us. And it's inconceivable that the offers won't come in at some point. But like, he does have the luxury now of choice, and, you know, do I want to stay for another couple of years, learn my trade even better, learn from someone like Gary Woddick, for example, who's obviously been so important in kind of everything that's happened in the last sort of 2 years. Or do I just like sack it off and go elsewhere just because, you know, the championship team's come in? I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think that's the way that it'll play out. No doubt Monday morning when this pod's gone out, we'll have a shocking notification that I don't know, Norwich have come in for him or something like that. But and he's halfway down the drain line at that point anyway. But it really is like impossible to like describe and sort of explain properly like what a ridiculous job that guy's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, beating Ipswich away in the league, if you had said that like even like 2.5 years ago, you think like just as like we went in the pandemic and just as like lockdowns were happening and the season was curtailed, you know, when he was sort of interim manager, like if you had said like in 2 years time, it's just over 2 years to the day now, I think since the season was curtailed, maybe like 2 years and 2 weeks or something. If you'd said that you'd be sat here, you know, recording on a Sunday afternoon, extremely hungover, having just watched Cambridge United beat Ipswich away in the league, like you would have been laughed out of the room. It would have been absolute insanity, and it should be impossible. Like this, it shouldn't be happening, but it is. And you know, he will be aware of like this is a rare situation in football, specifically for managers, to be at a place there where you basically got complete job security, at a place where you are loved and you love the club as well. I just can't see anyone just jacking that in just because you know, maybe, you know, a bigger club with a shinier stadium comes in for you. Yeah. But yeah, I would hope that'd be the case, because like in an ideal world, this team just doesn't age. Like they just stay stay as they are, and they just continue going for the next, I don't know how many years I've got left, but we'll see.
take it a step further though. Like when we were on the train on the old football special yesterday, we went part of the stop before Ipswich was near the market, which, I mean, granted, it was a cup game, fourth qualifying round, and granted, that was a brilliant season in itself and such an important season for the football club getting promoted that year and everything. But even just take at that point there, if you'd have said that you're going to go and beat Ipswich in the league and whatever it is, I know it's like 8 years ago, but it's just to think how far the football club's actually come from playing, you know, non-league football to League One football, and not just here for a day out sort of thing. It's like we're actually serious about being in this league. I mean, we're 13th now. We've got a really decent chance of finishing in the top half, which is just would be an incredible achievement. The only thing is though that like this football team this year has damn near killed me off. It's ridiculous. It's worth saying, like, this season's been it's been a joke. Like, think about some of the days out, like Lincoln and Pompey and yesterday in Newcastle, and it's just every week at the moment. It's crazy. Yeah, they've got to have some respect for our health, Jack. It's ridiculous.
It is tough at the top, mate. And yeah, just to put it into perspective, a stat I've stolen off Owen Mizen, Cambridge United need just 3 points from the final six games to record their best placing in the football pyramid since 93-94. So that really does just put it all into perspective.
Sorry, Jack, I've just had a massive flashback to the end of last season. I mean,
we only need 1 point for three games.
And one of them gets Harrogate. It should be fine.
I was also going to say, isn't it satisfying as well that we will, I mean, unless something crazy happens, as we were just saying, it's most likely that we're going to end the season on a points total, which would have kept us up every year. Because obviously this year, the points total for safety is going to be a lot lower than your average, which is what we said, it's about 50, 51 points, right?
Yeah.
If you reach that, you're normally going to be okay, or you're going to be right on the edge. But it looks like we'll finish on maybe, let's say, 55 points, which would keep us up every single season, which is satisfying to know that it's not that we stayed up just by this sort of strange year where there's this massive divide in the league. But actually, with that points total, would have been fine every year, which is just, you know, it's satisfying.
It's not just a flash in the pan, exactly. As they say. So, yeah, it's been a wild old ride so far this season. And it's been so nice to integrate with different fans groups and podcasts and, you know, just to see reactions from fans, you know, before games and after games. And
meeting them for a scrap before games and stuff.
Yeah. Yesterday it seemed highly strong.
Just to butt in there, Jack, sorry. I was just while you were talking, I just had a quick flick for the league table. We're above Charlton.
Yeah.
Funny, isn't it?
It's mad.
The thing about that is, it's so annoying that when we went there, we played them when they were at their best, because, you know, we could have had another one the days out, you know, because that was a great day out, but a bit of a damp scrim of a game from our point of view. Play them any other time in the season, we probably would have beat them.
It'd be much easier next season if we could just sort of be like crew and just sort of lose every other game, because I think my liver just cannot handle this at the moment.
It is extreme.
Dangerous.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, like I was saying, just great to have all this integration with different fans groups and different podcasts, and, you know, hearing the reaction of different podcasts and things like that. And yesterday was just the same as well. And credit to everyone.
Should we drop in, if anyone hasn't heard the saltiest post-match interview of all time, should we drop it in here?
Had you seen me 5 minutes ago before Ross decided that somebody else went first, then there would have been a lot of expletives. I'll try and keep them limited. I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated and angry about losing to a tin pot pissy little club whose high point is being managed by a thug in John Beck. I hope that Cambridge go down next season. I hope they never win another football game, because they are an absolute sodding disgrace to the existence of football.
They were only serving sour grapes at Ipswich yesterday, no burgers. It was a great day out.
That guy was a dick, wasn't he? Like, oh, look at me, I'm wearing my pink jacket, calling, I can't remember what he was saying, like grow up, like you look like you're about 70, surely you're more mature than what you're saying.
And he also basically said, you know, he didn't actually basically say, he also said, Tom Carroll didn't deserve to breathe. Like, that's not a cool thing to say about a player. Like, say he shouldn't be anywhere near the ground.
Imagine not deserving to be able to intake oxygen.
Yeah. That was him after he'd been pushed down the bill a bit, so he had time to calm down. I hate to think what he would have said if he was first on that.
Fucking ball flag.
Enjoy the win, Cambridge. He had what's it, come down with me vibes.
Yeah. I don't think we'll be getting him on the pod anytime soon.
Oh, we should. Oh, we should. For a laugh.
What sort of response do you reckon we'd have got to that message? do you want to come on and just debrief after the game? No, fine. Carry on.
I think it would have been expletive filled. Anyway, a great day out for Cambridge United and a great victory. There's still plenty more to come on today's pod. We're going to look ahead to Wickham and Morecambe, and we'll have a cheeky fans interview for you.
I'm Jack Idell. You're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, and Jack Swindlehurst is definitely a Carlisle fan.
So this coming Tuesday, Cambridge welcome Wickham, Tuesday night under the lights, although it'll be the first one after the clocks have gone forward, so it might have a bit more of a summery feel to it. Wickham sat in eighth place at the moment. Could be a tricky one for Cambridge United. This obviously they're, you know, knocking on the door of the playoffs. And they beat Donny 2-0 last time out on Saturday. 3 wins in the last 5 games. Julian, how do you fancy our chances on Tuesday night?
God, I tell you what, I am glad that we've all but done relegation before we play these lot again, because they have that Gareth Ainsworth style of football that is just, I mean, I'd love to see what Wes Burns makes of Wickham, by the way, if he's got such a big problem with us, because they are, I mean, they're good at it, clearly very successful, but they're such a hateable football team. And the reverse fixture of this, which was only, a month ago, was probably my least favourite game of the season. That includes a 6-0 and a 5-1 loss Wednesday and Lincoln, respectively. But still, it's just like, I just never liked playing Wickham, and I'm just delighted that there's not that much riding on it, personally. I do think we're obviously in a decent bit of form. Our home form's good. The pressure's all on them. We've got players back from injury. We could use a fresh Wes if we fancied it. I said, why not? Nothing to be scared of, but I'm delighted that there's nothing riding on it.
So yeah, we've had a ton of questions about squad rotation. Richard's been in touch, Adam too. So yeah, Richard quite boldly says, now we're safe, who would you like to see Bonner bring into the team, and who do you think he'll give game time to? Tom, starting with Tuesday, who do you think is going to come in, and who would you like to see come in?
Well, I think the problem with that is that I don't really want to see any of the players not play. Mm. You know that have been sort of regulars in the team. I get that, like, you know, it's good to, you know, rotate your squad, give different people a chance, but like, they're starting on merit because they're performing a very high level. But I guess like the obvious names, I guess, are Bennett and Lancaster as the two sort of, I would suggest, most exciting guys potentially who haven't really been playing much. But again, like, to bring Bennett in, you're going to have to probably drop Williams. And like, we just spent like, you know, 40 minutes talking about why George Williams is so good. I don't think that would happen. And I don't see any reason why it should, just for the sake of squad rotation. Lancaster's maybe one that can feel maybe a little bit more hard done by not to have got more minutes, especially playing in the position that he does, where, like, you know, it's kind of chopped and changed basically from game to game who actually plays in that number 10. And he's very, very rarely got his chance. So maybe he's someone that we might like to give some more minutes to. But I wouldn't be just changing things around for the sake of it, to be honest. You know, everyone's enjoyed watching this football team grow and develop and, you know, produce the sort of performances that we've just spoken about all season. So, like, I don't really feel the need to change it now. I guess one other name that would probably come to mind would be Kai Yearn. Might be nice to see him, you know, sort of in the first team a little bit more. Obviously impressed in the Pizza Trophy, and I think scored a couple of goals, or certainly scored a goal against Ely City at the Abbey in the, I think the Cam's Invitational Cup. So, yeah, maybe a few people on the sort of edges of the squad who maybe haven't had as much minutes as you might like, but I don't see the need to just chop and change for chopping and changing sake, basically.
It would be, just on Kai Yearn, it would be, I'm just quite interested to see the guy play because I've got it on, you know, on really decent authority. I was chatting to Matt Ramsey, friend of the pod, who was at that Ely City game that you mentioned at the Abbey. When was that? Last week. And it's well worth going and searching for Jan's goal if you haven't already, because it's a pearler and apparently he's mustard. So I'd love to see him get a bit of a chance, a bit of a run out here and there. But as Tom says, like, there are still points there. You know, we could finish on a really, really impressive points total. And yeah. Does anyone know if League One works the same as the Premier League, where each position gives you a different sort of bonus, like financial bonus at the end of the season? Do you know that?
I think so, yeah, but I think it's pretty marginal. Like, it's not, you know, we're obviously not talking like club defined.
Yeah, it's not millions of pounds.
I think actually it's a good point, like, in terms of, you know, what we want to see or what we should hope for sort of for the rest of the season, because ultimately what happens on the pitch is pretty much irrelevant, you know, in terms of our sort of ambitions as a club for the next few games. But like, I think as a club, like, because of the level that we're playing at and the sort of teams that we would have to compete with to, you know, get into the sort of top, you know, upper ends of the table, like, we've really got to focus and kind of hone in on the sort of smaller wins, like things like points totals, things like how many goals do you score in a season, things like can we finish in the top half. Like, these are the things that we should be now, I feel, be like targeting as a club.
These things also set the tone for things like summer recruitment. And I heard Dunk saying in the pre-match presser before the Ipswich game, he was saying, even if there's only one point in it, the difference between saying you finished 18th and 12th is huge. Especially, you know, especially if you're trying to sign someone, it's just another way that you can, you know, convince someone this is a football club that's heading in the right direction and that might not be, you know, involved in a relegation battle that we inevitably will be next year.
Well, yeah, it's certainly an interesting one. Be interesting to see how Cambridge goes. So obviously, next two games, both against teams really fighting for something this season. So, and I mean, much like Ipswich were on Saturday until we crushed their dreams. So yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting on Tuesday night, and be good to see Kai Yearn. I did see a thing about Kai Yearn on Twitter being like, the reason why he's not featured is because of his age, and it's to do with having not signed a contract yet, like a professional contract, I believe. So I think that might be why we're not seeing too much of him.
He's still 16.
He's 16 years old, yeah.
I mean, that's
bonkers, isn't it? I'm twice his age.
Are you really?
I'm probably twice his weight.
It's a lot more than twice.
Actually, yeah, yeah. But no, it'll be good to see him. And yeah, and then maybe Glenn McConnell, Nascimento as well. Nascimento. Just a bit of Santos flair in there. But yeah, certainly be nice to welcome. It won't be nice to welcome Wickham, actually. No one really likes him, but it'll be a good old game on Tuesday night, and we'll see how that goes. Then the following Saturday, we welcome Morecambe, and I think we probably like Morecambe a touch more than Wickham, but only a touch. And I caught up with Joel Shooter from Shrimps Trust podcast last week to look ahead to that game. Right, and I'm joined by Joel from the Shrimps Trust. Cheers, Joel. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers for having me, Jack.
I was going to ask you how you're getting on and how your season's been, but I mean, it must have been a bit of a tough one so far.
Yeah, it has been tough. I know, obviously, we started quite well. I think we rode a bit of that kind of promotion bounce, maybe, even though the squad was quite a lot of different players in the squad. We still kind of have that feel good around the club, obviously. Cole Stockton's been great all season, but particularly in that, you know, those opening months, that was when he was really, really, really good and virtually unplayable at times in a few games. So, you know, that kicked us off pretty well. And then going into November, December, I think maybe some of the underlying numbers started to catch up a bit. We lose a bit of momentum. There's a few gaps that start to appear at the back. Fix those in January. Getting a good bit of form, results not quite going our way. But you can see the performances and you can, you know, you think, well, look, just keep performing that way. And think, you know, that's all you can do, really, and the results will come. And then, obviously, Stephen Robinson departs to St Mirren. So that kind of just throws it up in the air again. And since then, I think it's obviously just been very hard with you know, Derek Adams coming back in. And it's a tough job he's got. kind of coming in at this stage of the season with a squad that's tailored to Stephen Robinson, essentially. So it's been difficult, obviously. Lost a bit of momentum, I think, over the past few weeks, but hopefully, you know, international break might have been what everybody needed, and hopefully we can kind of close the gap over these next few games, because nobody's really taken the initiative out of the out of our kind of relegation rivals. Nobody's really, you know, gone leagues ahead, so we're still in with a shot staying up, definitely.
Yeah, sure. I mean, everyone in that kind of bottom five has been struggling for form, so there is some solace there. I mean, no wins since January. What do you think's been the problem for Morecambe in that time?
I mean, it's a funny one, because you've kind of got two different things. So you've got, in January, we desperately needed a new goalkeeper, and we needed a better centre-half partner for Anthony O'Connor. And we got both of those. We sorted that out. And performances from January were really good. That last win was against Wickham. I was chatting to a friend of mine. It's arguably our best ever league performance ever. You know, we're playing the top league one side, and we dominated them. And kind of either side of that, we were really unfortunate not to get a point against Wigan, and played some great games. We were really unfortunate to get a point against Bolton instead of beating them. That was a weird game. And then, so we were playing well, and it felt like we were just being unlucky for a few games after that. We were just unlucky, maybe not taking our chances enough. But you felt that results would come. And then, since then, Stephen Robinson departs, and then we've got a new manager coming in, and, you know, different methods and different players, and players that have been selected by Robinson to play the kind of play in the way that he wants them to, and that might not necessarily suit the way that Derek wants them to play. So it's a tough thing to match up with so few games left. And I think it looked all right at first, and then obviously we've conceded a very late equaliser against Bolton, which I think was a bit of a kick in the teeth, and had some pretty disappointing defeats since then. So I think a few different things have kind of culminated in what's made this run quite a tricky one.
Yeah, certainly not going to be straightforward. So at time of recording, still two games for Morecambe to play before travelling to Cambridge, both home games coming up this Saturday, the 2nd of April, against Burton, another one against Oxford the following Tuesday. Is that Burton game the one you're kind of focusing on to try and really get something, to get a run going?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose out of these next few games, Oxford, obviously, they're a really good side, and they're pushing for the playoffs. But I think I'd say Burton and Cambridge are the ones that you probably would target as the more winnable ones. Burton have slipped. They're very much mid-table. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're not in any danger of relegation. I don't think Cambridge are in any danger of relegation. It'd be nice if you won the next couple of games, just to put yourself, you know, just to put yourself on the beach nice and early for when we do play you. But I think Burton's, you know, I think, yeah, we just need a win, I think, just to get confidence back. Because, you know, you look at, there's a gap of, you know, there's a little Wimbledon. I think Gillingham have stolen a bit of a march now, I think, and they might be a bit tricky to catch up. But you could also Wimbledon and Fleetwood, like, everybody, you know, we've not won in a long time. They've not won in even longer, I think. So, you know, there's a kind of black hole of confidence. And if we can get a win under our belts this Saturday against one of the more winnable games in our kind of final running against Burton, then hopefully that can kind of, you know, kickstart things a little bit.
Yeah, certainly be interesting to see how the next few games go. If we look ahead, Saturday the 9th of April here at the Abbey Stadium in Cambridge, you guys will be coming, you know, still at least in touch with safety, I'd imagine. So, yeah, certainly interesting to look ahead to that. Obviously, we both came up from League Two last season. I mean, both teams have had good runs at this level, and then found it hard at other times. I suppose we've kind of been able to put a few longer runs together. But, do you feel that could be a game when you come to Cambridge that you could get, you know, one or even 3 points out of, given that we've kind of played each other quite a few times in the past couple of seasons?
Yeah, I mean, our record against Cambridge hasn't been great recently. Obviously, yeah. Last season there was that 5-0, which was very bizarre. It just kind of, that was an odd game. And then obviously, I think in the reverse fixture, we got a very dodgy red card, I like to add. But, you know, but the first half in Cambridge was one of the best performances I've seen from a League Two side in many years. So, but yeah, and then the reverse fixture, and the home fixture for us actually in this season, that we were just terrible in that. But I think when I look at Cambridge and I look at Cheltenham as well, and I kind of think like the difference there isn't there, like, you know, you've not spent, I don't know what the budgets are, but I don't think you've spent loads more or loads less than us. It's probably not too dissimilar. There's a budget. I look at you, the players, I don't think there's a huge gap in quality either way. You could probably, people could probably argue, but I don't think there's any kind of gap in quality in playing squads kind of worth really arguing about. I think what we see in kind of Cheltenham and Cambridge compared to Morecambe is the value of kind of continuity. I think, you know, you've kept Mark Bonner going up and, you know, while despite losing somebody like Paul Mullen who scored so many goals, like, you've still been able to just keep going. And, you know, Joe Ironside stepped up and it's like the standards are kind of already set. Everybody knows the kind of job roles and everything, and the same would go for Cheltenham as well. And unfortunately, that's not really something we've been able to have, really, over the past year. So I think that's probably what I'd say is the main reason for the kind of differences between our league positions. It's that, you know, that continuity, I think it is quite vital, especially for tighter knit clubs and smaller clubs at this level like ourselves. You know, it is important. And unfortunately, as much as we're very stable at a ball brim level, and well, I think we're really well run, but if managers decide to leave, then what can you do, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, after these next couple of games, the gap could be a lot lesser, it could be a lot more, so it'll be certainly interesting to see. But looking ahead to that game again, kind of a key player or two for Morecambe, if Morecambe are going to get anything from the game.
Oh, I mean, obviously, the Cole Stockton is always the name on everybody's lips, and he has been great this season. It's a funny one. A lot of people think that he's not quite hit the heights over the last few games that he hit at the start of the season, but, you know, he's still got a lot about him, and he's still important to the way we play. I think, looking at our other players, I think Dylan Connolly is one to point out. He was kind of signed as like a pacey winger, and he wasn't by Stephen Robinson in January, and he wasn't getting a load of game time. But since Derek Adams has come in, I think something about his playing style and his work rate seems to kind of resonate with Adams. So he's been a pretty key player under Adams. He likes to run in behind, stretch the defence, but he'll also come and drop short and link play. So I think he'll be one worth watching out for when we do play.
Certainly be interesting to see him. Be interesting to see how your season goes. In your heart of hearts, do you reckon you're staying up?
Yeah, go on then. It's gone. I mean, it's a funny one because, you know, it feels a bit desperate at times, but we're still only a point or two off. And you look at the runs that Wimbledon and Fleetwood are on, you know, the initiative is there to be taken. And so hopefully start at Burton this weekend, you know, we can start taking it.
Well, listen, good luck. And thanks for joining us. It's been good to chat.
Cheers.
Thanks again to Joel. The clever of you might have noticed that that was recorded before Saturday's game. But since then, they got a massive win against Burton. 3-0 win there, also helping their goal difference. So they're 21st, 2 points from safety, but they have a game in hand over Gillingham, who are above them. That big win has given them hope. And obviously, by the time we play them, they will have hosted Oxford on Tuesday night too. So could be really getting out of that relegation zone, Tom. So do you think it'll be a tough game?
Yeah, I think, you know, I guess having gone there at the start of last season and absolutely nobbed them, they seem to have basically got progressively better from there. And I think, like, realistically, like, they're having the season we thought we would have. Like, and yeah. I don't think that's not like a dig at all. I actually think they're doing pretty well to even be in contention. Like, again, like, we speak about budgets and you look at the teams that are below them, like Doncaster, like, they've really spent a hell of a lot more money on the squad than Morecambe have the ability to do. So, yeah,
also in a season where they lost their manager, right, as well. So they've overcome a lot of adversity, yeah. If you see what I mean,
yeah.
to still be able to shout.
I guess, like, to counteract that a bit, they've got obviously Derek Adams back now, who, you know, I guess it's obviously a bit of a weird situation, the way that it's sort of just gone full circle. But I think for them, it's probably a pretty good situation to be in, to have someone like that coming back to the club. And obviously Cole the goal up front. Look forward to seeing him.
For them, this is a massive game, isn't it? That, like, I'm not entirely sure what their running is like, but obviously you mentioned Oxford and then us. Like, they need points from somewhere, and they'll look at us, a team, a very beachy team, and be like, there's potential for some points there. So they'll be right up for it, especially Cole the goal, the main.
Yeah, They've got MK and Sunderland last two games, and then Pompey the game before that. So I think those are Oxford and Charlton will be tough ones.
They'll need maximum points from us then, really, for them. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, certainly be tricky for them. But yeah, as Tom says there, they've really done, without being patronising, done quite well to be in contention. And as I say, that game in hand over Gillingham could prove all crucial if they win against Oxford and then again against us. So Mark Bonner will not be underestimating the task, even though looking at their league position. And yeah, as we've kind of alluded to already on the pod, Cambridge United, whilst they might do some rotation, will want to finish this season as strongly as possible. I mean, the prospect of a top half finish is almost unimaginable, really, given everybody had us pinned to the bottom of this table at the start of the season. So it's quite a nice position to be in. Looking ahead then, Leo got in touch and said, what goals should we set ourselves for next season? And I know we've still got, you know, a handful of games left, but it's good to look ahead. Is the kind of aim to avoid another relegation battle and do what we did this season, or should we be looking higher, really? And I think I might know the answer, but Julian, what do you think?
I think the sort of simple sort of realist answer to it is that for a while we are just going to be trying to stay in this division as long as possible while we grow as a football club, try and stabilise ourselves as a League One club. And I think the first aim at the start of maybe I'm being a pessimist. You can stop me if you think I'm being a bit of a pessimist. I just think that next year it's going to be a similar sort of thing. It's going to be right. First aim is relegation, and then go from there. You know, it's like I don't think it will be a start the season and expect a mid-table finish. I just don't think we've got the budget for that. I don't think we're a big enough club at this stage. A lot of that's dependent on players that we keep and who goes. I think we definitely, you know, seen Mark Bonner's. We've all seen enough of Mark Bonner's sides to know that they can give anybody a game in this division. I would say for me, it probably will be a bit of a similar season. There'll be a relegation battle at some point. It's just going to be go again, basically. But hopefully we manage to strengthen enough so it isn't a worry. I mean, let's be honest, it's hardly been a worry this season. So I don't know how much more we need to do, but I do just think that's for now still going to be the primary focus.
Yeah, consolidation there. Tom, anything to add on that, or are you pretty much in that camp with Julian?
Well, Jack, I'm glad you asked. if you had asked me that question on Saturday evening, my answer would have been something close to winning the title, I think. but having had a few hours to
sober up.
Sorry, that's the one. Having had the time to reflect, I shall say, I think like it's important that we don't get like really over the top carried away with like what our expectations are of a football club. It's quite weird. It's a bit surreal almost that we haven't had really any conversation about relegation all season. That's quite like if you said that at the start of the season, I wouldn't believe you. I would have thought you were a liar. but like realistically, like until we sort of do what Accrington have done, which is stay up, until we just sort of part the furniture at this level, we are always going to be in the bookies' favourites to get relegated, and it's probably fair enough, I guess. You know, all things considered, resources and like if you look at the teams that are coming up, like you think it's probably going to be a couple of big spenders in there, maybe Mansfield, maybe Forest Green. So, you know, the competition is going to get better, and I think that it would be quite unlikely that we're going to have the same situation where there's like two or three teams who are basically gone by Christmas. Obviously Crewe and Doncaster have basically been tied to the bottom of the table all season, but you know, we'll obviously see, but I think I'd just go back to the thing I said about small wins, really. Like you've got to almost focus on the sort of little things that, you know, maybe seem more irrelevant. You know, it's not a concrete achievement to score five more goals than we did this season, but like they're the sort of things that we need to focus on. How can we get better as a club at this level? And I think like it goes without saying, I've got full trust in the club to be able to do that. And I think, you know, clearly we're a long way away, I would say, from being able to consistently compete with the likes of Ipswich, for example, purely because of resources. But you know, I think if we can have anything even close to the season that we've had this season in terms of maybe a little bit of a cup run, you know, win at some of these bigger grounds. If we do Ipswich over again, that'd be fun. then that has to be a good season by anyone's standard, basically.
And there's a small matter of a couple of Cambridgeshire derbies as well next season to think about.
Oh, yeah, forgot that. They got absolutely humped at home, didn't they, on Saturday? That made it even better, finding that out upon full time, that they indeed still bottom of the Championship. So, we'll see them again quite soon, I guess. So, yeah.
First time in 20 years. You say fun. I think they might be...
Oh, mate, they're going to be fucking horrible, those games, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They really are. I mean, you saw even just what happened after the Ipswich game at the station that we were just.
So this one actually is a derby, isn't it?
This one is a derby.
This is a proper cup final, isn't it?
World Cup final.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Rather than like Intertoto, which I think is what Ipswich won.
I would just add, like, I don't know if it's something that we've said too much this season. Like, in the away end yesterday, I ended up stood next to a dad, and he had his 12-13-year-old lad with him. And, like, I just thought, like, I really hope sort of fans of that age who've just started coming for the first time, like, please just don't take it for granted. Like, take it from, you know, any of us on this pod and people who've been going longer than myself. Like, this is quite good. Like, this is quite rare that we're going to, like you can pretty much go anywhere in the league and, you know, you're selling out away ends. You know that you're going to have a good team of footballers committed to the football club who are producing results basically on a weekly basis. Like, if you're like, you know, group of mates just started going to Cambridge, like, you've got to understand how good this is. And I think it's something that we maybe haven't spoken about enough, because, like, we're just kind of in our stride of just like, oh, next week we've got fucking Ipswich for some reason in the league, and Sheffield Wednesday coming up next, and
some reason
we've got to book our trains to Sunderland for some reason, all that sort of stuff. And, like, it just kind of, like, it's just kind of become the norm. But, like, I don't want that. That's one sort of novelty that I don't think will wear away too quickly, and it shouldn't do.
Well, definitely for, like, me and you, because, like, or all of us who, like, remember, you know, getting humped by, like, Alfreton at home and teams like that, right? And it's like, they're just so different now. We can't just lose sight of what we're seeing in front of us. But you talk about, like, small wins, Tom. Like, young fans want to see Cambridge United win football matches, and that's what will bring them back, right? So I think even in the last six games this season, you never know, like, you know, young lads, young teenagers or whatever who were at the game yesterday might now be coming to another view, and what winning those games will do to their support next season. Maybe they'll go, oh, we'll buy a season ticket next year or anything like that. So it's just that long-term growing a fan base that is going to be so important.
It feels like we've come an awfully long way from being sat in someone's basement arguing with Graham Daniels, and now we're here. And that's it's a great time to be part of Cambridge United Football Club. And yeah, we're positive now, but hopefully we'll reek of negativity next season when we're getting pumped every week, because I know you lot love to hear us moan and bemoan.
I've been scratching myself silly. I'm getting so frustrated with having nothing to talk about and no, like,
God, praise him again.
Criticize, like, it's annoying.
Isn't Jubra Lokadena good? Yes, he's good. Move on.
We get it.
I get it.
He's good.
But yeah, basically, our derby, sorry, not derby, cup final, not cup final, weekend has been great. If Danish beer companies did weekends, I think this would be right up there. We had friends of the pod, Scott and Rachel, married on Friday. Congratulations to them. We had a great game yesterday with geographically local rivals. And you've got your pod coming as well at the end of this weekend, long weekend. So yeah, it's been great. Tom Walker, thank you.
Thank you very much, mate.
And Julian Roberts, thank you. You've got a little add-on to the end of this pod, a little bonus for the listeners.
Yeah, a little bonus, a little treat to finish off with. Obviously, we just talked about the Morecambe game next Saturday. That is also the Cambridge United Community Trust match day, which is bring a pound to the ground. I had a chat with Sam Gomersall. There's loads of events happening. Obviously, the Trust do amazing work in the community. So I'll leave it to Sam to explain more about what's going on, but do donate generously because they do incredible work. And yes, thank you for having me, Jack.
Hey, Sam. Thanks very much for joining us on the pod. How are you getting on this morning?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Not too bad, thanks.
I hope this is some sort of honour for you, as we always say when people join the pod.
My life's peaked. I mean, it really doesn't get It's not going to get any better than this, really, is it? Beating Newcastle in this, just about.
Yeah, yeah, just about on par. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, that's what all the players were saying as well afterwards. This is the last thing they've got to come. So obviously you're here to tell us a bit more about the Cambridge United Trust Day, the match day against Morecambe next Saturday. So what's going on the day? How can and how can people help?
Yeah, so we've got so much going on next Saturday, and we're really excited about it. We've held these community trust match days before, and the last one that we had kind of scheduled was versus Cheltenham. Yeah, 2 years ago, and it got cancelled the day before.
Yeah,
so, yeah, pretty bizarre kind of circumstances, but really excited to hopefully be actually be able to host this one. And we've got so much going on. We've got some STEM activities for children outside the front of the ticket office with AstraZeneca. We run a program called Active Science and helping to combine science and sport, and so it's great to be able to showcase some of that on the day. So head along there if you've got kids, where there'll be some activities combining science and sport. We've got disability football on the pitch at halftime. A couple of weeks ago, we had our walking footballers take part in some.
Yeah, that was great.
Walking football on the pitch at halftime, and we're going to showcase some of our disability football. We've got young people from our Premier League Kicks program, which is turn up and play football in the community as the guard of honour. We've got so much going on. There's a poetry. There'll be a reading of a poem all around celebrating diversity. In the past few weeks, we've had anti-discrimination assemblies going into primary schools, and off the back of that, we've encouraged children to write a poem about diversity, and we had over 500 responses, and the winning poem will be spoken out loud. And then maybe the final thing is we run a program in primary schools called a match reporting project, where we teach kids the basics of writing a match report, hopefully teaching them some English skills. And we've got some children coming along to this game as well, who will write a match report and maybe ask the players a few questions afterwards as well.
That sounds amazing. It's another thing, and you know, I think everyone's so proud of the work that the Trust does around the club. It's just it's amazing to see it all showcased. So what can people do on the day? It's called Bring a Pound to the Ground, right? So I'm assuming bring a bit of cash along to help raise some funds.
Yeah, relatively self-explanatory, that one. So we wanted to kind of showcase all the work we do, and to be honest, the most important thing that we'd love fans to kind of do is to just share the work that we do. If you see something on the day that you love, why not tell someone about it? Why not communicate on social media if you do have it, about how we use football to make a real difference, changing lives. And if you read the programme on that day, there'll be stories throughout it about the way that we impact individuals and how we use not only sport but the brand of Cambridge United to make a real difference, particularly in Abbey, North Cambridge and Tramington Meadows, but across Cambridgeshire as well.
What's your role at the Trust?
My role in the Trust is the Trust Manager. So I lead our team of now 22 staff, which is amazing. Wow. I feel really privileged to lead such a great group. And the team works across kind of four areas of education, well-being, inclusion, and community engagement. And yeah, if I could just share, I think the two things that we do unbelievably well, and it was so great to hear the mental health podcast a few weeks ago now. I think the two things that we do really well as a club and a community trust are talking about mental health, ensuring that message gets out into the community. So we run a secondary school program called Mind Your Heads, which teaches mental health education to secondary school children. And then the second thing we do is I think we do disability sport unbelievably well. We have 17 weekly disability football sessions, and we have the most amazing coach, Phil Mullen, who makes these sessions really welcoming and really engaging for young people, but also adults. And I'm I'm really delighted that we can showcase that on Saturday.
Yeah, that's amazing. And thanks for the plug there as well. That's that's great. So obviously on the day, people bring some cash down, help raise some funds. But then also there's obviously other ways to donate, right, if they want to help out the trust and the work that you do.
Absolutely. So we have a text number on the day. So that one is text trust to 70560 to donate £10. And then we also have other ways. So we've got a website where you can find out a little bit more about if you wanted to set up a regular donation or to help the trust in any other way.
And just lastly, how in the past, you know, a couple of years, obviously the club's sort of gone in one direction. Has that been matched by the way the trust's gone in terms of how it's grown, like within the city and within the size of the trust itself? Has it just been going, you know, up and up and up?
Yeah, I think so. And hopefully we're doing it in a kind of sustainable way. But I think throughout the kind of past 2 years, what's been evident is the level of need within our city, and particularly, you know, our role is trying to work with everyone, but particularly those in Abbey, North Cambridge and Trumpeton Meadows, three areas of Cambridge, which we feel that COVID could have exacerbated the inequalities that we see in Cambridge and Cambridgeshire in general. And I guess for us, the work that we did in lockdown gave us a bit of a reputation and gave us a bit more kind of airtime as well. And so, yeah, I think off the back of that, we managed to grow and that was great. But for us, it's about those individuals that that we see their lives changed, and that's yeah. great for us.
Well, it's amazing work, Sam, honestly, and from all of us, keep at it, basically. And obviously, if you're listening to this and you're heading along to the Morecambe game, do bring some cash, donate generously, and enjoy everything that's going on. But thanks very much for joining us today, Sam.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hi there, mate. Just a quick one. I know we've just recorded the pod and spent, you know, nearly an hour talking about the Ipswich game, but I completely forgot to mention that clean sheets were a real platform to build on. So yeah, if there's any way you could get that in, during the edit, that'd be great. So yeah, it's clean sheets, platform to build on from Tom. Cheers, mate. Bye.